Wheeland Presley Funeral Home and Crematory, a proud supporter of WQPT, has been serving Quad City families since 1889. Now providing live stream capabilities for viewing your loved one's funeral or memorial service at their chapel in Rock Island.
Is our safety net disappearing and ready for a marathon run in your own way in the cities? Like so many things we enjoy, the Quad Cities Marathon will be a lot different this year. But those very changes make it more appealing for some of you to lace up and take part. More in a moment. But first, charities taking it on the chin. COVID-19 has decimated businesses and damaged family incomes. The very safety net we need right now are the charities that are also impacted by the pandemic. Just how bad is it? We talked with the Vice President of the Community Initiatives with Quad City Community Foundation, Kelly Thompson. The foundation is the lead agency organizing the Quad Cities Disaster Relief Fund. The Quad City Disaster Relief, or Recovery Fund, I should say, actually started a while ago. It was greatly used during the flooding from last year. How has that been adapted for this year?
Absolutely, Jim. Yes, we actually, the Quad Cities Community Foundation, founded and seeded the Quad Cities Disaster Recovery Fund in 2016, actually, because we know that the matter of a community disaster that's going to require help from many people is not a matter of if, but when. So we were ready when the flood happened last year, although it certainly wasn't anything we were anticipating, and worked with that last year through the recovery committee of a collaboration called Disaster Ready Quad Cities. This year, of course, although the flood last year seemed huge in scope, we found a much larger scope disaster to respond to for our community with the COVID-19 pandemic, with its social, economic, and health disaster. And we have been fortunate to have much, much larger gifts to the fund this year, enabling us to help a much wider range of organizations, help a much wider range of people here in the Quad Cities.
Because let's be honest, I think one of the points that you guys are trying to make is that you could have a bunch of different organizations trying to collect money. You're trying to be kind of a central location that can help a number of different charities and nonprofits get through this tough time.
Absolutely, and you know, we'd never want to discourage anyone from giving to the organizations that they care about and that are helping people right now. But we wanted to make sure that our community was ready to act fast when disaster struck and when people are feeling very generous. So the Quad Cities Disaster Recovery Fund has been able so far to collect over $1.3 million and is still accepting gifts and very much welcomes them. And we have been able to give out so far just over $1 million to many different organizations. So that we can provide that quick support as they identify, here's the next thing that our community needs to respond to this pandemic.
How do you decide who gets the money? I mean, that's the obvious question, because when you think about it, you're trying to help save this safety net, these organizations that try to make sure that people have at least some support when times get really bad. How do you decide which ones are the ones that are going to get this funding?
Well, we have a great collaboration. It's not just about the Quad Cities Community Foundation making those decisions. So we gain information from being part of Disaster Ready Quad Cities, from being part of the COVID-19 Coalition, which is made up of all of our local governments, nonprofits, businesses, and health organizations. So we know about all these needs, right? We're learning about them as they develop. Then a team of staff from the Quad Cities Community Foundation, from United Way of the Quad Cities, and from the Regional Development Authority quickly review grants as they come in and get those decisions out as quickly as possible. We base our decisions
on... I'm sorry,
on,
go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
No, please. You base your decisions
say,
on what?
Yeah. We base our decisions on the priorities of the fund. So number one is absolutely basic needs support for people who are disproportionately affected by the pandemic or who maybe were already vulnerable beforehand. So that's number one. And we've funded things like homelessness services, which have had to adapt immensely to provide that safely rather than congregate shelters, moving people into hotels to keep them from passing illness along. Food support, crisis assistance that again goes through nonprofits to people and individuals. So that's number one. And then number two is really any other important service to people who are affected by the pandemic. So education, childcare, you know, it's not maybe not keeping people alive, but it's doing all those critical things our community really needs to continue to be successful and which are having a hard time or maybe needing to change how they do their work during this pandemic.
And what has been the response so far? I mean, obviously, I don't want to diminish what you're doing, but in so many ways, it's a drop in the bucket of the need. Is that what you're seeing, or do you see that a lot of the need is being met right now?
You know, there is always more need to be met. As I mentioned, we've had over 1,400 generous donors, many from the Quad Cities, some from around the country, give to the fund over $1.3 million. But we've received over three times that amount in requests over the last few months and thus far been able to grant out $1 million. We keep granting every week. So I think it's clear as we look at our nonprofit services, as we look at people experiencing evictions, as we look at people experiencing food insecurity, that the need is still there. People are still hurting economically and still needing to be protected in their health and their social safety net. And need continues. We definitely welcome more gifts to the Quad Cities Disaster Recovery Fund.
Well, and let's be honest, as you pointed out, last year it was really put to the test because of the floods. And this year you're thinking, oh my gosh, that was nothing. I mean, tell me what the difference is between last year and this year by scale.
Sure. Well, just the numbers of people affected are so much greater, and it's not one geographic area of the Quad Cities that's affected. Not to mention, you know, while the flood on the Mississippi covered a great geographic region of our country, this is affecting the entire world. So we're in this very, very complex place. That's why it is so important that the response comes, again, not just from the Quad Cities Disaster Recovery Fund, not just from the Quad Cities Community Foundation, but from the many organizations involved in the COVID-19 coalition. So these are your emergency managers, public health authorities, who we must listen to and respect their guidance. Education, local government, businesses, our chamber and Visit Quad Cities are engaged, United Way is engaged. This is this huge, huge collaboration, and that's what it really takes in order to deal with such a complex issue and keep our community safe and doing well.
Is that one of the things that you think has really benefited the Quad Cities, is the fact that, as you said, this was pretty well developed in 2016, really first put to the test in 2019 because of the floods, and then you have the pandemic of 2020. It looks like a lot of the groundwork was done, and the first big test for this was also done last year.
I would definitely say that that's true. The Quad Cities Community Foundation identified several years ago that we had a role to play when our community faces either incredible opportunities or very serious challenges. And one of those was in relation to disasters, both natural and otherwise, as this one is more of a health and economic disaster. So our board said, we need to have a role in this. We need to make relationships and connect with all those organizations that I just told you about. And we need to make sure that among other roles that we take, that we have and create this disaster recovery fund, because our community is very generous and we need to help people act quickly when they are feeling that generous urge when disaster strikes.
And that's where I was gonna get to next, because like if there's a fire or if there's a tornado or if there's one single event, people are more than giving right off the bat. But if you have a prolonged event like last year's flood, or even worse, this year's pandemic, you may see a lot of activity at the beginning of the event, but not so much weeks and months later. Is that what you're seeing right now?
That's absolutely true in the case of any disaster, Jim. You're exactly right. We learn a lot from the Center for Disaster Philanthropy, and that's absolutely the case. Within a few days or weeks of a given high attention disaster, giving peaks and then, you know, goes to a much lower level. And so, yes, we had a great influx of gifts early on. We still continue to get gifts and we're very grateful for them, but there was definitely much more action early on. People are also, you know, experiencing their own challenges now, but we're very grateful for those who can continue to give to support the Quad Cities Disaster Recovery Fund who do.
The other thing is that oftentimes, and you would know this far better than I, is that people want to target their money specifically to certain groups or certain organizations or certain causes. And then you see that also very much at the beginning, as opposed to a more general fund such as yours. Is that problematic?
You know, early on, actually, I think we did not really experience that with people wanting to restrict their gifts. I think what we probably saw was a lot of people give to the Quad Cities Disaster Recovery Fund, but also give to organizations or causes they specifically cared about. Because people really do see both things, right? That this flexible, quick-acting fund, which could shift as the days and weeks and months brought new or different challenges and different resources that we could work around, but also focus in on the things that they care about. They just know that this is the way to do the first, to provide that flexible, holistic approach for our whole community.
Community foundations involved in so many different things, not just, of course, the pandemic. You support so many different causes. You're also very active this year in equity and continuing the racial division discussion, let's say. What are you spearheading at the Community Foundation to tackle such a sensitive issue as that?
Sure. I think the most important thing for the Quad Cities Community Foundation, and we've been recognizing this over the past several years and doing, you know, slow internal work. And I just say slow in the sense that there's such a sense of urgency and, you know, nothing moves as fast as something really needs to. But the most important thing that we can do is look internally, look at how we are doing our work. Is that having the impact that we want? Because to really take equity into account and to have the kind of outcomes that we want for our community. We want our whole community to be successful, and it won't be if we aren't acting with those principles in mind. So to look at our own processes, how are we making grants? How are we've done a lot of work to make sure that our board reflects our community more correctly than it maybe had in the past. And also look at the other resources that we're deploying and just make sure that we're doing those with an eye to racial equity and other kinds of equity for people who are marginalized and kept away from opportunities. So that's a number one, is looking to ourselves, teaching ourselves, learning from others, and shifting the way we do our day-to-day work. We're also glad to support through grant making. We're glad to support through spreading the words of our colleagues, like those at United Way of the Quad Cities, who are challenging the Quad Cities to do the 21-day equity challenge, to learn more, and to make sure that we're doing more to reach out to groups that are led by our local communities of color, that have their goals in mind, and that we are making what we have available to people doing that good work.
Because as you say, and it's in your name, community, it's more than just a pandemic. You still have a lot of work, you still have a lot on your plate besides the pandemic.
That's absolutely right. And the Quad Cities Community Foundation, we're not only about disaster, we're here when disaster happens. But we want to do all of our work with donors who are creating perhaps endowments that will give to the causes that they care about permanently, those that are working to give to communally to efforts like the Quad Cities Disaster Recovery Fund or our Community Impact Fund, which provides flexible dollars every year to respond to community needs, and to do all the connecting and, like you say, community initiatives work of working together collaboratively on things that no one person or organization can solve by themselves.
We're heading into the holiday season, we're heading into the fall and the winter. Are you a little bit worried about what your fellow citizens are going to face as this pandemic continues and as the need continues on into the end of 2020, heading into 2021?
Mm-hmm. Of course, we at the Community Foundation are concerned and have a heart for what's going on. I think we, along with everyone else from the COVID-19 coalition, encourage everybody to keep doing the right thing, mask up, social distance when possible, follow those great guidance coming from our public health officials. And that will help us make sure that our community can keep functioning as best as it can, that our kids can be educated, that our people who are experiencing homelessness can be safely housed and cared for, and that all of these things that we want to be able to do anyways, we can do safely.
the Vice President of Community Initiatives with the Quad City Community Foundation, Kelly Thompson. Well, welcome to autumn. It certainly was a difficult summer, but many places were able to reopen under health restrictions. So we hope you're able to visit some restaurants, theaters, music venues throughout the cities. Here's Laura Adams with a taste of what you'll find if you do go out and about.
This is Out and About through September 30th. Enjoy concerts at the River Music Experience Courtyard September 25th featuring The Dawn. It's free and starts at 5. Face masks required. Or check out the lineup with movies at Modern Woodman Park. Tickets are $5. Quad City Touch Rugby for all ages 15 and over takes place Fridays through October 9th at Centennial Park. Registration required. Ballet Quad Cities presents Ballet on the Lawn Take 2 at the Outing Club the 20th at 1 and 6 p.m. Purchase tickets prior to the event. Walnut Grove Farms 2020 Scenic Drive Barn Fest Fine Arts Marketplace will be online. Visit their website for more information. Michael Winslow brings his particular brand of comedy to the Rhythm City Casino Resort Comedy Series on the 24th. And get your groove on at the free concert at Schwieber Park, Thursdays at 7 through October 1st. Social distancing observed. The Black Box Theater presents three viewings by Jeffrey Hatcher, September 24th through October 3rd. Masks must be worn. Garage sales will be happening all over Rock Island and Milan the weekend of September 26th. Check out the interactive map to show you where they're located. And Circa 21 reopens their doors with the comedy The Savannah Sipping Society. For more information, visit WQPT.org.
We're in this together, Quad Cities. We take care of one another. So mask up, wash your hands, and social distance. So that in time, we can get back to the very best version of the Quad Cities.
Jason Carl is the frontman of the group Jason Carl and the Whole Damn Band. But we caught up with him as he played some original work on the stage of Moline's Black Box Theater. Here's Jason Carl with Yazoo River.
I'm going down to Mississippi and up the Yazoo River in my dreams. I'm going down the Mississippi and up the Yazoo River in my dreams. Tomorrow I hope to make it down in New Orleans. I met a girl, she said her name was Penny. I said you look more like a million bucks. She took me to a ranch and I met a maid named Dot. She said, I hope you know I think you're crazy, but good luck. I'm going down the Mississippi and up the Yazoo River in my dreams. I'm going down the Mississippi and up the Yazoo River in my dreams. Tomorrow I hope to make it down in New Orleans. I met a man named Tony, he served me drinks. He said, you know, down here a dollar goes a long way. And so I gave him all my dollar bills, he appreciated them more than I did anyway. I saw the flashing lights and I heard a song that I'd forgotten. And then I harvested the vegetables that the ignorant man thought were rotten. I'm going down to Mississippi and up the Yazoo River in my dreams. I'm going down to Mississippi and up the Yazoo River in my dreams. Tomorrow I hope to make it down to New Orleans. I make it down to New Orleans.
Jason Carl, Yazoo River, a song he first featured in his 2013 album with the group Jason Carl and the whole damn band. It's being called Run Your Race at Your Pace. This month, the Quad City Marathon isn't running its usual course during a Sunday morning along the river in the cities. Instead, it's a month-long virtual course unfolding right now. And there's still plenty of time for you to take part. We talked with the marathon's assistant race director, Laura Wittnobel, about the way it all works. So Laura, are people getting used to the idea of a virtual race? I mean, it's been a year of virtual activities. Is a virtual race kind of now part of our norm?
Unfortunately, I feel like they are getting used to it, but I'm hoping that maybe in 2021 we'll be back to normal racing of getting up early and meeting all of our friends at the start line and the cool temperatures and then, you know, finishing in the post-race party. I would love to see that in 2021 for sure. But people have been great so far. They're still signing up for the race, so that just shows that they do really care about the TBK Quad Cities Marathon.
And I want to talk about the camaraderie in a moment, but let's talk about the virtual run. It's been going on all month. It's still going on, but you've got a limited time still to take part.
Yep, so you have until the 27th to complete your distance. So we recommend people registering as soon as possible so that way we can get your packet ready. People have had the whole month. So we've seen some people already complete their marathons or half marathons. I finished mine last Saturday. It was very wet, but now it's done with. It kind of works out to your advantage. You get to choose the best weather. I did not do that, but so a nice cool morning. You can run it. You could run it on a Tuesday if that works with your schedule. So that is kind of nice that you get to choose the day, the time, the location, and your route.
I was just going to say the location and your route are pretty big too, because if you want to do something more challenging, or if you want to do something a little bit easier, or even perhaps something more scenic, really the canvas is white. It's open to whatever you want to do.
Yeah, totally, which works out really great because we have people from probably 30 different states that are participating, which is even great, and even overseas. We just sent a packet to Japan, so that was pretty cool to see that people literally from all over the country and all over the world are participating in our event.
Yeah, that is amazing, the Quad City Marathon being run in Japan, if you think about it.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about the routes. What have you noticed from people? Because do you find out what the route is? I mean, how does that all work?
A lot of people use their Garmin, their watch, or they're on Strava, which maps where you go. One thing that people have done if they've like uploaded their results that way. Also, what we did in the city of Moline, we actually marked out a half marathon, the 5K and a marathon, two different routes. So if people want to run a route that has been measured correctly for them, we have it out there. And we had some people paint along the course as well. In race weekend, we're gonna have pacers even. So that will be kind of nice. So if you are local and kind of want to get into a race-ish, but from a distance, I guess, that's just one way that we've kind of made it come together.
Yeah, and all the information, of course, is at your website, but I think we always do kind of get, obviously, transfixed on the marathon itself, but as you said, there are other runs that are going on that are also going to be virtual, like you said, 5K, the half marathon, even for kids, there's a run.
Yeah, actually, I signed up both of my kids, and we have some neighborhood kids that we're going to put up an archway in our neighborhood, and have a little kids race and maybe some Kona ice afterwards.
There you go. Now, like you said, I mean, what you're going to really miss is that huge crowd at the beginning of the starting line, the ability for a bunch of people that don't know each other, perhaps pushing each other along the route, and also the big party and the atmosphere afterwards. How tough is that? I mean, how tough is that this year, you as a runner, as well as an organizer?
Yeah, that is definitely, I mean, I love race weekend and race morning. There's all the anticipation of everything going off correctly, the start of the gun, we have the national anthem. You know, there's so much that goes into it to see it all come together, you know, planning for a year in advance. So it is a bummer that it's not actually happening. And obviously, like, we throw one of the best post-race parties ever. So it is a bummer, but once again, we have to look out for the health and safety of our runners. We want everyone to be able to come back next year and enjoy it.
Yeah, and let's be honest. I mean, your marathon isn't the only one that's impacted by this. Of course, marathons all across the country, if not around the world, are seeing that as well. But it does give you a chance perhaps to plan for next year as well. Do you already start planning for next year already?
Yeah, we actually are just setting up our registration for 2021. So that will go live, I think, the day after. So it'd be September 28th. So we're hoping to open it up right away and get people excited about next year.
And what would
Let's
be
move past 2020?
Yeah, exactly. And is that the key? I mean, are you kind of now planning like this has got to be over? I mean, you got to go back to your plan, eh?
Yeah, totally. Unfortunately, we know this plan B now, so if this were to happen, but we're definitely focusing on plan A for sure up until like the very last moment. So hopefully by then, I mean, it's September, so hopefully that won't be an issue.
You do have a number of diehard runners, local runners that are taking part, as well as people from around the area in the region each year. What have you heard from them? I mean, are they really happy that this virtual run, at least something is happening?
Yeah, it's definitely they're excited about something for sure. You still get a medal, you still get a shirt, you still get a bib. We mailed out a lot of bibs ahead of time, so if people wanted to run with them as, you know, an option, there is that. I think they do appreciate that race weekend. We're still doing a packet pickup. We're doing a little pop-up expo with some local vendors and sponsors, and we're going to have pacers for Saturday and Sunday morning. Just as options, and we're gonna, you know, kind of put a little mini course together with some water and stuff. So we are trying to do something safely, but it is really hard. But I think we've definitely got great running community around here. It's unbelievable the support that they give us. So that is really, really appreciated for sure, because events like this won't happen again if people don't participate in them. And I think that's what one hard thing that people may not understand if they're not in the event planning like world.
Absolutely.
But our support has been great from our sponsors and participants.
I was going to say the sponsors have been a big deal as well.
Yes, for sure. I mean, it's hard for them. They're hoping, you know, to keep their businesses open, and we obviously care more about that, and you know, we've been really super flexible on stuff, and you know, we want to try and support all those sponsors throughout the year as well.
Laura Wittenobel, assistant race director for the Quad City Marathon, and there's still time to register. All the information is at qcmarathon.org. On the air, on the radio, on the web, and on your mobile device, thanks for taking some time to join us as we talk about the issues on the cities.
Wieland Presley Funeral Home and Crematory, a proud supporter of WQPT, has been serving Quad City families since 1889. Now providing live stream capabilities for viewing your loved one's funeral or memorial service at their chapel in Rock Island.